Okay, folks, before we start today's show, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Texit Coin. And right now, today, December 7th, 2025, that Texit Coin is sitting right at $3.02. And I tell you what, they've signed up over 55,000 folks to help. This is a crowdsource project, and they've got over 55,000 miners that are pitching in to mine that Texit coin out there in the great state of Texas. Hey, if you want to get in on this and learn more about it, just shoot an email to texitmines@gmail.com, TEXITMINES@gmail.com. And put the word Palm in there, PALM, to get a discount on that first mining share. All right, thank you, Texit Coin, for sponsoring the show, and let's get right into the show.
Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Palm and Pine Podcast. We are grateful to be here with y'all today. And as usual, I got Professor Barlow here with me, and we're doing something a little different. What are we doing there with him, Douglas?
As usual, yeah, you can probably hear something in the background. That's the sound of the old John Deere A pulling the cane mill. And today we're going to walk you through and discuss a complete grinding and processing of sugarcane into syrup. And right now, if you are listening on the podcasting platform, you're going to hear the explanation. But if you go over to Patreon, if you're a member, you're going to see a video with this podcast, which shows everything that we did that day. And right now, so we made this cane syrup in mid-November. And right now, you see me driving the tractor, pulling the old vertical mill. It's an old mill, and it originally was intended to be pulled by a horse. So now we pull it with a tractor. And then my good friend Dave Wise is there feeding the mill. So we call it grinding cane, but really you're just squeezing the juice out of the cane. And the juice goes into a big barrel here, and we're going to get about 55 to 60 gallons of juice, and then we'll cook it. It's about 5:30 in the morning here and when we started, because you need to start early so you can finish before dark, because it's a long process, because after we get the juice, we're going to evaporate it down to the syrup. So here we're going at it.
Yep. Well, I tell you, when we do any hard work, it's good to get video evidence. Because people watch our podcast or listen, they probably don't realize behind the scenes how much hard work we're doing.
Right,
but you definitely got it going there. So 5:30 in the morning, get
right.
started. So
right.
Doug,
right.
Is this a this is an all-day deal?
How
many hours is this
all day ordeal? So it'll take about 3 hours. We got our juice up in about 2.5 hours because Dave was excellent at feeding the mill.
Okay.
And then we cooked it down. We probably had a good 6 or 7 hours in the whole process.
Now, before you had a tractor, how would the old timers have turned that big mill?
With a horse. They would have hooked the horse up to it like our grandfather did sometimes. Sometimes mm-hmm. he'd use the tractor, sometimes he would use a horse. I guess mm-hmm. if the horse was in a bad mood,
right.
he would get the old tractor. And, the horse, nice thing about the horse is once you got him going, he'd just keep going.
Yeah.
And it frees up another man for work.
Right.
So unfortunately, this process takes two men here,
mm-hmm.
But seeing the old tractor there, which came originally from Hillsborough County.
Yeah, grandpa's tractor.
It is. It's originally our great-grandfather's tractor. He bought it new in 1946, I want to say. But it reminds me of a story that Uncle Russell related to me from Preacher Davis out there at Mount Enon, Primitive Baptist Church.
Our ancestors started that church,
Absolutely,
Douglas.
Absolutely, they did.
Yeah, they formed it, Mount Enon.
So a story that I heard that Uncle Russell told me, Preacher Davis told him, some of them Futches went to church out there.
Oh, yeah.
One particular Futch out there.
Futches, the Aldermans, the Shepherds.
Yes, and this one particular Futch, and we'll just call him Farmer Futch, went to church out there, and he was tight, Steve. Steve, he was so tight, he had to pull his britches on him in the morning.
Well, I know some of our contemporaries in our family that are that way, Professor Barlow. So it's still in the bloodline.
It's still in the bloodline. So, So he was tight.
Oh, yeah.
So Preacher Davis had noticed, hey, you've been going to church here. You're a member for 20 years, and you've never put anything in the offering plate, Farmer Futch. And Farmer Futch said, well, I'll tell you what, I don't have any money. And you know, Baptist church, that's going to get noticed. You're not donating.
Yeah. Right.
That's going to be noticed pretty quick.
Most churches.
He said, Brother Futch, you know, I preached about tithing. What's up? He said, I tell you what, preacher, I don't have any money, but my cows will calf in the spring, and I will give the church one of those calves. Oh, that'd be great. So Preacher Davis was very happy.
So kind of an in-kind donation.
Yeah. He was very happy. And then, sure enough, spring come, he had 7 or 8 calves. And boy, and he called up Preacher Davis. Preacher Davis, I've got 7 or 8 calves, and we'll give you one. Haven't decided which one yet. Okay, well, great. Let us know. Well, as fate would have it, Steve, the next day one of them calves got sick and died. So he got on the phone to Preacher Davis. Hey, your calves died.
Oh, yeah. That's the one that died. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the way that works. Yeah. I mean, I hate it for y'all.
You better come get it.
Yeah. Well, you might have to charge them like a disposal fee. Well, that was definitely one of our ancestors right there.
Yeah, he was. Definitely. So your calf died, y'all. So here we see the sun is up. We're seeing a little eastern glow, and you can see Dave there feeding the mill. He was a fantastic mill feeder.
Right.
Now, he's a city boy from Kansas City.
Kansas City.
But he is now officially a country boy. I'll tell you how I know, Steve. He is now a country boy, you know, because when I was cooking syrup on this particular day, you know them old anole lizards we have?
Oh,
chameleon anoles? Well, one was up on my shoulder, and I didn't know it. And he said, you got a friend right there.
Yeah.
And that thing was up on my shoulder. So I said, well, Dave, and we start talking. I said, well, they're not scared of humans.
Yeah.
He said, right. And, you know, that old skink will run from you. But then that old eastern fence lizard, he'll kind of bow up like he wants to fight you.
Yeah.
And so he's officially a country boy.
Yeah.
Now, folks, if you have observed and can describe
the behavior
of all the lizards in your area,
right.
You are a country boy.
You're a country boy.
You're certified.
Yeah. He definitely is then.
So he is now a country boy now. He has observed and knows the behavior of all the lizards in the area.
Yeah.
So there he is feeding the mill. He kept 4 or 5 canes in there at a time.
Now, these mills,
That's why we made progress.
When were they kind of built, you think, or designed?
So this one was probably built early 20th century, late 19th century.
Okay.
And they're all kind of antiques now because I don't think anybody in the U.S. manufactures them anymore. Maybe from Brazil you could get one, place like that, or maybe Asia.
Is there any maintenance on something like that?
Very little. Yeah. You just lubricate it a little bit and clean it out, and it's good to go. They're very tough cast iron things, so they last a long time.
Unlike anything you buy today.
Absolutely.
That thing probably weighs 500 pounds.
Yeah, it probably does.
You know?
So we're feeding it here, and we're going to grind it down. We're going to grind all the cane down.
Now, this sugar cane, you got it stacked there.
Yeah.
That was a lot of work, probably.
That was a lot of work.
Just growing it and then getting it up to the mill, right?
Right. It's a tropical grass, and you plant it. You plant the stalk itself to get it to grow, you know. So you plant it. It comes up early in the spring. As soon as it's warm, it will come up.
Okay.
And then it grows all year. You need a long growing season so you can grow it successfully in the whole state of Florida, or southern Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, and in southeast Texas as well.
So it'd be
in
fair
Louisiana,
to,
yeah.
be fair to say the southeast coastal plain.
Right, absolutely. Right. Probably some areas of South Carolina you could grow it successfully, and it'd be big enough, mature enough.
To get enough juice.
Yeah, for you to get enough juice to do anything.
Now, when you cut the cane, you do that manually?
I did it this manually because we were only doing one cooking. So it was not a big chore for me to get out there and cut it manually with a cane knife. And you cut the top off, you strip it, cut it as low as you can because it has more sugar toward the bottom of the stalk.
Okay.
I don't know what to describe it like if you haven't seen it. It's a little bit like bamboo.
Yeah, okay.
In the way it looks.
Okay.
Yep. See the way he's stuffing it there with 4 or 5 stalks at a time?
And he
keeps a steady stream growing there. So
That's a good man right there. We've got to keep him on the payroll.
Absolutely. He was a very good cane stuffer, you know.
Yeah.
And And Dave has officially retired recently, so he told me, when I retire, I will really come over and help you out seriously. Yeah. You know, so.
Well, I'm kind of semi-retired, but unfortunately, while
you don't have any money.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately,
That kind of retired. You're just not working.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I was in Kansas deer hunting at this time.
Oh, okay.
So
right,
I couldn't I'd have been helping
you. You'd have been feeding that mill.
Oh, my goodness.
Right, so here we are, he's pulling it on around, and we're going to take all the juice in a minute here, and we're going to put it in the kettle. And we have
that
a 60-gallon kettle.
55-gallon drum that it's going into. Boy, there's a stream pouring in there.
He keeps a stream. You want a stream about the size of your finger all the time.
Keep it rolling.
And he kept it that way.
Yeah.
Some young people I've had help me, they don't get it, but he got it. He got production. He understood production.
And, right.
Right. And
kept
so
rolling in there.
Yeah, he kept it going. And
now after you smash that stalk, what do you call that?
You call that pumice.
The pumice, that's
right.
What's left.
And
you
could, it's very fibrous and it has some application. They use the fiber to make rope or something. I don't know.
I'm wondering if we could line our driveway with it.
You can lay it out. That's about all it's good for. It's hard to chop up, so you can't like cut it in for organic material in a garden because it's very hard to cut up.
But
we've even sent it through a chipper and it will not chip it up.
Ooh. But if I lined it on my tire tracks,
I think you'd do it.
Yeah, man.
Well, I got a big pile of it. Feel free to come get some.
That application is proprietary to Palm and Pine Podcast for driveway enhancement.
Right. So very often you end up burning it, and it's got a little sugar in it, so it burns like gasoline. So here we are. We have got it in the kettle now.
Okay, and, so you brought the juice over to this kettle.
We kind of missed some time here. I didn't get to, you're so busy that I didn't show all the skimming. So you put it in the kettle, and you heat it up, and most biological fluids or plant-based fluids, the complex carbohydrates will condense, coagulate, whatever you call it, and they will come to the surface and you'll get this big head of foam or crud, and you want to skim that off.
Well, that stuff's probably tasty, though.
It's all good. It's very tasty. Hogs love it, so it doesn't go to waste.
Yep.
You take it off and put it in the bucket, but it will make your syrup cloudy, so you don't want it in your syrup.
Right.
So there's a trick to skimming. If you skim too early, all the skimmings won't be up. And if you skim too late and it boils before you get them all off, it gets mixed in your syrup and you can never get it out for the rest of the run. So right here, we've measured the temperature. You get it up to about 198 Fahrenheit right before you start skimming. And that will give you just enough time to get it in the position where Dave is right now, where he's taking up the last of the skimmings, and she's just about to boil right now. So.
Now, when I was in Chem 1, I remember we talked about depressed and elevated boiling points.
Right.
So what temperatures are you shooting for with this stuff to
boil it? So it will elevate the boiling point as it boils off and you have greater density.
So it keeps going up,
up. Right. So right now it will boil at 212, about like water. But by the time we get to the end, it will be boiling at about 230.
So it's basically like a selective titration. in Chem Lab.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's an evaporation, and it's going to become the density of the concentration, I should say, of sugar in the liquid will increase as you evaporate.
And you're doing
water.
This all by a fire, like
all
a
by
wood
fire. Wood fire,
okay.
and this is our firebox, and it's a special kind of firebox. You can see the firebox is on this end, and it goes in a U pattern underneath the kettle, and then comes out a chimney. So the chimney is on the same side as the firebox opening. And that helps you to maximize the heat
goes
you
around.
Get out.
Okay.
That's why you do it like that. And you see now it's starting to foam, and it goes into it boils at first like water, but then it goes to this foamy state, and it's what food engineers call stage two boiling,
it just
turns into a foam. The whole thing is a foam, and the trick is to keep it as a foam until the very end. Now. And that's kind of hard when you're cooking with wood, when you're cooking something big with wood to keep the temperature just right. So now we've got it where we want it. Now we put a ring in it, you see there, and the ring keeps it from overflowing onto the floor.
Hmm.
And eventually it will foam up and flow over the ring. You'll see it. It'd be like a, it'd be like a big head of beer or something like that.
And so right now, essentially, you're getting rid of water, I guess.
Yeah, we're pushing the water out. Yeah,
and just
right.
making it more condensed with sugar.
Right. You're richer and richer sugar liquid. But we have a nice, clean liquid now. And sometimes, you put a few rags around that rim. And so when it overflows, it filters it that much more, you're always filtering it,
So what temperature are you at now, you think?
Right now we're probably still about 212, but really only starts to go up toward the end,
So as that water leaves, that boiling point gets elevated.
And now you can see it really starting to overflow over the ring, flowing down into them cloths, and speaking of cooking, I read an interesting story the other day about the Amish in Florida. We do have some Amish in Florida. There are not many in the Southeast because you need some doggone air conditioning down here, Daddy.
You know, being Amish is great until you're down here in the summer. Then that air conditioner
sounds
good.
But we have this one Amish enclave in Sarasota in the Pinecrest neighborhood, apparently. Huh. And they made the news recently in Thanksgiving because they baked and sold 6,000 pies.
6,000
pies. Yes.
They are kind of like entrepreneurs.
They are big
Amish.
Time, and I've heard they got a little bob. They're not,
And it ain't Texacoin either, what they working with.
And the old boy in the article I read, and it's at Yoder's Amish Village in Sarasota.
Wow.
He said that's not a record. In 2017, they sold 10,000 pies, and he said that got crazy. So they had to cap it at 6,000, and that's $30 a pop for them pies. So, and I saw a picture. There's a picture in the article. People lined up to go to the Florida Amish to buy pies down there. So Yoder's Amish Village. We'll have to get down there.
Yeah, I'd love to have. Yeah. Amish, I've been hearing they're having a problem, and I'm a biologist and I love to study population ecology. Well, they're having a little problem with DNA kind of getting restricted and a DNA bottleneck in these little Amish communities.
I didn't know they were having that problem.
Yeah, and I've even heard that they are paying healthy gentlemen. And so I don't know if you see where I'm going, Douglas, but we might get some pies.
Well, I do know that I have heard their numbers double every 20 years. So.
Well, they're having, like I say, they're having.
So they got something going.
The DNA bottleneck. Yeah. And so every now and then they need an infusion of some new DNA.
They need
DNA.
To mix with the English every now
and then.
Now you can see the head of foam really rolling there and overflowing. Once you get it like this, you're just very happy. You've got it rolling and got it hot, and you want to keep it hot right till the very end and in that foamy state. Now you see a little further along here, you can see it's getting amber in color, and I have my thermometer in it. Now, I cannot take credit for this thermometer design. I learned it from them boys down at the Dade City Pioneer Village.
Okay.
It's basically just a thermometer you buy from auto parts store that would
like
go in a cylinder
like
head.
Like on your cylinder of your truck. Okay.
Because no other thermometer we tried, no food thermometer, would take the heat.
Yeah, that's hot.
But this will take the heat, so it's a little jig, and it drops that bulb, that temperature bulb, down into the middle of your syrup kettle, and then you can see the gauge there on the box. And so in this gauge, it was a particular gauge. It had 230 Fahrenheit on the gauge, which is very convenient. You can see it there, and that's where we're going to go to.
So that's your goal. That's your goal.
That's our goal there. See, and we're only at about 220 right now. And so there's a lot of ways you can tell that it's ready, the color, the viscosity. Old timers can tell from the way it starts to jump. You'll start to see these hominy jumps.
Okay.
That our grandfather would say.
It gets thicker, evidently.
And you'll start to see these fingers come up, and he knew by those fingers that it was exactly ready. So now we're getting much closer to the end right now. You see it. Kind of a very amber looking.
A very viscous bubble starting to happen.
Right, and we got about 7.5 gallons in this run, so it was a very good run. We'll take the temperature reading again here, and you'll see how that temperature is measured.
Now, this whole time, Doug, do you kind of know how many lighter knots to throw on the fire?
It's tricky to cook by wood and keep the fire where it is, and so I've gotten better at it, but I've had my bad days, let me tell you, because a mistake is to let your foam go down back to a liquid. You don't want to do that.
Got to keep her rolling.
So
right.
You see now it's up at 225, you know, we're doing very good, you know. And then there are the finishing pans there. We're going to put it in after we take it up, and then we will bottle it, and you'll see that process here. You know, I was reading another interesting story, speaking of interesting stories, about a Civil War physician, and they were having trouble with the Union soldiers. They were having diarrhea, dysentery, fevers, all kind of bad diseases. They were losing more to disease than to wound.
That's right.
And what he discovered is it was their hardtack, and they were eating hardtack and beans, and that was the trouble. He put them on an all ground beef diet.
There you go.
The wounds started healing. The diseases started going away. And he even wrote papers about this. He studied it and showed there were about 9 diseases that would be improved when you ate an all-beef diet. And he formed a little patty he would feed to the men. Huh. And his name was, you know, Dr. Salisbury.
Oh, yeah, the Salisbury steak.
That's where Salisbury steak comes from. And wouldn't you know that was a medicine at one time, not a food.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you. You know, personally, I went carnivore, and I used to suffer from multiple afflictions, and it cleared them all up. I mean, look at me today, the picture
right.
of health.
And when Big Pharma, Rockefeller took over medicine in the early 20th century, they buried his work because you can't patent beef,
you know,
but it got me so excited, Steve, I went down to Quincy's Market US 19 in Chiefland.
Man.
And I bought a bunch of beef and brought it to the house.
And I noticed you were looking better. You got some color back
in
you.
Yeah, got some color back to me, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So read up on Dr. Salisbury.
Let me tell you real quick.
I'll
tell you real quick one other thing Big Pharma's covered up.
Okay.
Two things.
Okay.
And it's the answer to the most tough ailments, right?
Okay.
Or you might want to call them, you might call them demons in your body.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Prayer and fasting.
Right.
Prayer and fasting. They say, Jesus himself, he said, if you got a really tough demon, then you got to bring in prayer and fasting.
There you go.
And I tell you, last time I was in the church, it didn't look like a lot of fasting was going on. Now, they did some praying, but Jesus said on them bad, on them real demons, get them bad demons, you got to do that too.
You got to do that fasting,
All right, what you doing
here, Doug? Talking about. So now I'm taking a refractometer reading, little handheld refractometer. Some people call them honey testers, and that will give me the sugar percentage.
Oh, cool.
You look at it, you look through the sun at it, and
right.
you see a blue area and then a line to a white area and a scale. So I'm looking for 70 to 72%. Now, this was the first reading I took. I think it was like 68%. It wasn't quite ready. A common mistake when you're making syrup is to take it up too soon.
Right.
And I've done that several times. It looks like it's done. It looks kind of thick. The color's right. And that's the rookie mistake. You take it up too soon. So I do all this stuff to make sure I have a thick syrup. If you take it up too soon and bottle it, it will mold in the bottle.
Sure. You got water in it then.
So you get, you want 70%, and then magically it will not mold. And your sugar is a great preservative,
absolutely.
And the ancestors knew that. And so you can preserve fruit that way. You can preserve a lot of things
For the advanced listener, you might want to go read up on osmotic potential, and that'll show you how that high rate of glucose, what it does. That glucose, it can be dangerous.
Yeah. You can see the hominy jumps now popping up. Ooh, you saw one just then.
Yeah,
when it starts to shoot up them little balls like that, you know you're just about ready. So here we're at 230 now.
230. Right there.
We're going to go into 231, and then we're going to take up this syrup, and we can be guaranteed the thickness
now,
is just right.
How much is left now? Like, you started with 55 gallons.
There's about probably 8 gallons in
that kettle
right there, because I wasted probably a half a gallon getting it up. So it's a very good haul. The syrup in this area has a very high sugar concentration in the juice. You cannot beat it. It's better than anywhere else.
So your final product, you're what, 12-15%?
A good 12-15%.
Okay.
Much better than with maple syrup, but better than with a lot of other people growing cane. Because this area, it's sandy, it stresses the cane, has a lot of sugar in it by the time you get to the finish line, you know.
It's funny how a little bit of stress will improve somebody.
It does. That's why we're so awesome.
That's why we're on point. We've been under a lot of stress. That stress will get you.
I'm going to take the thermometer out here and take one more refractometer reading, and then we're going to take up the syrup. See, it's at a good 231. That's what you want. And I'm going to take up the syrup here, and then we're going to bottle it up, and we're going to show you that here.
So about 8 gallons. So you can move that probably pretty quickly. You just scoop it up with a bucket, I guess.
Yeah, you'll see here. I'm going to bring it out with a bucket, pour it into the finishing pans. And, you know, once you get it bottled, you bottle it hot. It has a fantastic shelf life. I don't think it ever goes bad, to tell you the truth.
Right, kind of like honey. Just
right. But it all gets et before you can find out.
Right. There ain't none left over. That's right. Now, back in the old days, Doug, this would have been a big deal because this would have been their only source, except maybe honey, right?
Only source of sugar. You know, and I've always heard that when the Europeans came here, the Indians they'd never tasted anything like this. The only sugar they'd ever had was honey.
Right.
So, yeah, but it would have been their only source of sugar, even for baking. And you can use cane syrup in any kind of baking
anywhere you
would normally
sugar?
Do. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You're just putting a little more liquid into the cake or whatever you're making.
Right.
Now it darkens the color of the baked good or whatever it is.
Oh, that's great.
You know?
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. But some people have gotten spoiled. Now they like to see white cakes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So the sugar.
So that dark color, Douglas, is there some other trace minerals in there?
Indeed, I have heard there's some a lot of iron and a little bit of magnesium.
Magnesium.
Oh, that's
good.
It really has
for you.
All the goodness. You know, cane is a grass, so it has all the goodness from the grass.
Okay.
In it, all the way to the finish line.
This may be the only vegan thing I eat. Is this cane?
It is truly vegan. It indeed has no meat product, but you know, it's like a lot of a plant-based things. You can convert it to meat pretty easily because hogs love it.
Yep.
Hogs love it in their feed. Cattle love it in their feed.
That's what you would call a sweet feed.
Right.
Yeah.
The molasses tanks. Well, that's where this comes from. That molasses is a byproduct from making sugar. Now, if we were going to make sugar, we'd cook this on down to about 80%.
Wow.
And then we would take that and we put that in a centrifuge.
Oh.
And that would push the remaining liquid off of the sugar crystals.
Well, see, that's why you have the problem of ultra refined food.
There you go.
See, this is somewhat refined, but nothing like a white crystal.
And that waste from the sugar process down in South Florida, that's your molasses. So molasses has a darker flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Than cane syrup. People think it's the same thing. It's not.
No.
Cane syrup is the whole product. It has a brighter, lighter flavor than molasses, and it's not quite as dark. So here I am dipping up the syrup at the very end here, dipping it up into the finishing pans, and then we're going to bottle it. And all these things, you know, that we're doing here, you know, I tell kids all the time, I don't care what you're doing, no matter how simple you think it is, if you don't think strategically about it, you will get beaten. Mm. And every step in this process, I've had to think it through because I did it wrong a time or two.
That's how you learn.
Yeah, so we've learned that you have to have two finishing pans there because with just one, it will kind of get clogged up because we're straining it again.
Okay, yeah. You got like a cheesecloth.
Right,
running
we have a flour sack cloth. And this way you have two. If one gets clogged, you can dip some in the other.
Because you
want
to
get it out.
Yeah, you got to get that thing out.
Because it continues to cook.
Yeah.
So you want to get it out
once
you get it at the thickness that
you're
looking
for. So you're scooping out with that bucket.
Yeah, so scooping it out with the bucket there.
And 7 or 8 scoops, you got it. Because that looks like about a gallon bucket there.
No, but it's in a foamy state.
Oh, that's true. So it's expanded. Yeah. So
still
the volume.
Still
yeah,
in that stage two boiling
state. That's not the true volume.
No, that's not the true volume you're going to get when it settles down and cools.
Right.
So we're taking it up here. This is an excellent syrup in the state that it's in. It was about 72% sugar at about 231. So we're dipping it up here and then we're going to bottle it. And you're going to see that process in a minute. And, on the 3i Atlas raffle, we're going to give away some of this. And, if you come to
the
podcast and you appear in person at the camp, or we'll meet you in town, I guess, but if you appear in person on the podcast.
Fortune favors the bold.
Absolutely. you're going to get a free bottle of Barlow & Sons Pure Cane Syrup for appearing on the podcast. And that That offer goes out for the next year now, and we're looking for interesting people to have on the podcast. So we don't bite. Don't be afraid to come and talk to us. You know, if you got a funny story to tell, you know something about the history of the area, the history of Florida.
We'd love to have you.
Yeah. Anything, you know, some good hunting stories, whatever it is, we're interested in it, and we'd love to have you on. And you're going to get some of this syrup. The syrup came out kind of like honey, almost in its color. And the variety we grow right now really makes a very beautiful honey-like syrup. So,
wow. Now, how many people are actually still doing this in Florida, do you think?
More than you would believe.
Really?
You know, the Dudley Farm does it. And
right,
and
that's over by
Newberry.
There's
somebody over by Shady Grove Baptist Church that cooks. And there's usually a few people in Dixie County that cooks. And Marcus Mitchell, you know, the Swilly Farm,
the
they
Swillies,
cook.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll cook several times
good
in a year.
Now,
these are
now,
just
is,
the people I know. So
is there any organization that you could be a member of or society here?
There have. You know, there used to be the Southern Syrup Makers Association, but I don't think it's around anymore.
Oh man.
You know, at one time they got in trouble for not having a food permit label on their syrup they were selling.
Gosh,
and that's when they formed the Southern Syrup Makers Association, and they got a law passed that they do not have to have a food permit to sell syrup anymore. You have to put a few things on the label, but there's a state statute now in Florida for selling cane syrup.
So we needed a law to be free.
Right. We needed a law to do what we've been doing for 100, 200 years already.
Yeah. You know? We had to have some lawyers
make a law. Yeah, right. But white collar folks, they got to grift one way or the other. So that's how they're grifting now. But anyway, you know, we don't sell a lot of it, if any. We'll use it for our own personal use and to give away and to give away in the raffle and on the show and stuff like that. So here I'm getting to the very end of dipping it out. And you can imagine there's a little cleanup when you're done here. Mm-hmm. So, that's a lot of syrup there.
Now, next year, Doug, I guess you do this the same time of year, every year.
Right.
So if one of our listeners maybe wanted to come and help and participate, I bet you'd
there
be,
you go.
You'd be
you
glad
know,
to have
there
them.
There you go. I would not be able to pay you, but we'd be glad to have you.
I'll
do you like Dave. I paid him in syrup.
Yeah. So. Maybe we'll give him a Patreon membership.
Need help. I especially need help with the grinding part at the beginning, but it's an interesting process to see learn a little bit about. I'd love to see somebody learn a little bit about it, but it is involved. It's not easy. You have to have a kettle. You have to have a mill.
How many acres of land did it take to raise this amount?
Not a lot. For just one cooking, maybe a quarter acre of cane went into it.
Wow.
You know, and
so
we had a really good year. The cane was very thick and tall this year.
So even a small like backyard homeowner could do this.
Yes, if you have a mill and a kettle.
So, and maybe not a fire, a burning ban or a burning ordinance.
So it is something that kind of farmers tend to do. It's something that amateur gardeners
do. But it doesn't
do.
Require hundreds of acres.
No, it doesn't require.
Somebody with a 5-acre
You don't need a
track.
Section in Minnesota and
right,
you know,
or
and
Kansas.
A, you know, in a six-figure income to do it, but you need to. It is something that farmers do.
It'd probably be tough
to have the equipment. So
it'd be tough to find an old kettle, and
they're very expensive too.
And
because you pay a certain price per gallon. I forget what it is. If it's $10 per gallon, something like that, or something.
Wow.
That you're going to
pay
for.
So there's your bottles.
And even the mills are super expensive. So now I'm getting in my special little chair.
Okay.
And I'm going to start to boil it in this finishing pan. And there's even some things to learn here. We learned that if you do not have the valve configured in the vertical like that.
Okay. you don't want it horizontal.
Yeah. It will not work right if you do it that way. So, you know, you have to think strategically about things or you will get beat.
I bet you can burn your fingers there.
You better have a glove on at least one hand because it comes out at about 225. But you don't have to water bath these because they are sufficiently sterile already because of the temperature.
Sure.
So here we're going to start filling these long neck fifths, and you will see you fill it all the way to the top. And then as it cools, it will condense down, and you'll have about 3 inches open in the top of that bottle.
Oh, okay. Once it cools, yeah, it'll get
it contracts. And
the things you learn on the Palm and Pine podcast.
The Palm and Pine podcast. A lot of chemistry involved.
Right. I'm glad I took 25 hours of chem. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So here it is. It's filling up, and I'm going to fill her all the way to the top. Boom! Fill it to the top there. So this syrup had a beautiful honey color.
So you got
like
a quarter turn gate.
Yeah,
valve.
You want a full port.
Mm-hmm.
This is a full port, half inch valve. So you want to be sure and get them full port valves. For this job. So you lay it on its side, and that will sterilize the lid.
Sure.
And then when it condenses, it'll draw down and create a vacuum naturally in the top of that bottle there. So we did a number of long neck fifth bottles like this. Long neck fifth bottles are handy for having on your table. They're not so messy when you're pouring it out on your waffle, your pancake, or your biscuit.
Oh, my goodness. Man.
I get that Kodiak pancake mix.
Oh, man.
make them waffles, boy.
Oh.
After I've fasted.
You do that prayer and fasting. I tell you, something got lost because they don't want to talk about that fasting. No. They want you to take that shot in your belly. What is that now? Everybody getting them shots.
Oh, God.
It puts your stomach in paralysis permanently, but that's better than prayer and fasting. Yeah.
Well, you got to pray, I've learned, to get the willpower to fast.
It takes it. That's right.
You will pray, brothers and sisters out there, let us tell you, if you will pray, God, give me strength, self-control to not eat so much.
That strength will come in there. Yeah, that's right.
And he will give it to you eventually. You have to pray for that. Just like you're praying to get off alcohol or tobacco. Pray.
And you know what I like about it and what they hate is it's free.
It's free. They don't hate it. It's like that Salisbury steak.
Yeah. They don't like that. You can't put a patent on that.
This podcast makes me want to go to Bet's Big T on US 19 in Chiefland and get one of them Salisbury steak lunches.
I went up there the other night and did that seafood night. I tell you, I about hurt myself.
After fasting, though.
Yeah, after fasting. I did 48-hour fast after that.
After that. Well, you about could probably, But God will give you the strength and the willpower to go without eating more and more, So.
I tell you, when you get in that fast and you hit about that 30-hour, it's right around that time.
Yeah.
The flesh will turn off, and then you don't have that hunger, and you can kind of communicate.
Right. Dr. McCullough recommended to get all your eating in the 8-hour period in the 24-hour period. So I've been working on that.
16 hours of fasting. Absolutely.
I've been working on that, so I finish eating at 6 p.m., and then I don't eat the next day until 12.
There you go.
And I can already tell the difference, brothers and sisters out there.
Intermittent fasting.
And the way I feel
You won't hear this.
The way my pants fit.
You won't hear any of this on the mainstream media.
No, you won't hear this on TV. They got to push
drugs. They're going to hide it.
And unnecessary stuff. It's always a scam with those people. It's always a scam.
Well, you about got the last bottle here.
Yeah, I'm about to get the last bottle here, and we're going to set them on the table. And we're very happy. We got 7.5 gallons, and we wasted a little bit. And so it just turned out fantastic. But you got to, there's a thought process to everything along the line, or you will get messed up and it will not work out. That's the way with every little thing you do.
The average meth head ain't going to come pull this off. That is great.
That's right. We're getting it done here. We put up some quartz, too. I don't think I show them here. I think I just show the fifth
thanks
bottle
for making this video, Doug, and sharing this with us. And, thanks for joining us, and keep it Florida. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.